Goddag, og velkommen til Radio Shalom, den jødiske stemme. Den eneste jødiske stemme, radiofonisk, i Danmark. Vi sender på 87,6 MHz. Og mit navn er Miriam Schechter, og jeg er jeres vært i dag. Jeg begynder med vores gæst. Hende har jeg været til ballet sammen med. Hun hedder Bente Cass Nielsen. Det var den 2. september, og det var på Det Kongelige Teater. Og vi så to balletforestillinger, og det vil vi tale om i dag. Velkommen til studiet, Bente.
Tak skal du have.
Bente Cass Nielsen, jeg ved, at du er glad for ballet.
Jeg er meget glad for ballet.
Og jeg vil være så glad for, at vi to udveksler noget om vores oplevelser den aften. Hvis jeg vil begynde med sådan den helhedsoplevelse, synes du, det var en god aften?
Jeg synes bestemt, det var en god aften. Det var en meget speciel aften. Det var jo åbningsaften på sæsonen. Det var første aften, så der var jo masser af balletdansere blandt publikum, masser af anmeldere blandt publikum. Og så var det jo den her skotsk symfoni, som blev, opført for første gang i Danmark, sammen med Sylfiden, som jo er en gammel ballet. Men jeg synes på mange måder, det var en stor oplevelse. Det var altid skønt at se ballet med skøn musik.
Ja, jeg har også haft den her samme oplevelse, at det var en aften fyldt med stemning af forskellige grunde. Netop Mendelssohns første gangs opførelse i Danmark til ballet altså, og så Sylfiden, som for mig er noget, jeg er vokset op med. Så det var fra publikums side, var der en forventning. Og mange unge mennesker, som, jeg vil ikke sige, det er en sjældenhed, men primært er det jo voksne til balletforestillinger. Og det var glædeligt at se unge, altså både kvinder og mænd. Og de jublede, og de var glade, de var betaget af det. Og det opmuntrer mig, fordi jeg har på et tidspunkt været bekymret for, at netop de klassiske balletter, Bournonville og nogle andre, at det ville forsvinde, fordi der kom efterhånden ikke så mange unge mennesker. Og derfor var den aften for mig en opløftende oplevelse.
Jeg vil så sige, jeg er ikke helt enig med dig, Miriam, fordi jeg har gået meget tit til ballet. Jeg elsker moderne ballet, jeg elsker sådan noget Mr. Gaga-ballet, Ohad Naharin, sådan noget virkelig kropsnært. Men jeg elsker også den klassiske ballet, og jeg oplever ofte i Det Kongelige Teater, at der er mange unge mennesker, der kommer ind og ser balletter. Det synes jeg synes, jeg ser det tit. Altså, det er ikke kun det grå guld, der går i teateret og ser ballet i dag.
Jeg har en anden oplevelse. Og det er godt, du sådan siger det, du mener om det. Jeg kan bekræfte, at når det er Ohad Naharin, og når det er moderne dans, altså bevægelse, så mangler der ikke publikum. Og Hyppe, som er direktør for balletten, har jo formået at skabe nye balletter, nye sammensætninger af dansere. Så på den måde har han tiltrukket et større publikum end normalt. Men for mig, som opdraget med og begejstret for den helt klassiske, grundlæggende klassiske ballet, der har jeg på et tidspunkt været bekymret. Og hvis der kommer nogle flere unge mennesker, så er det kun en glæde for mig. Og jeg var virkelig glad den aften, at den blandt andet på grund af at se sammensætningen af publikummet. Jeg vil gerne drøfte lidt med dig balletten, altså som sådan. Hvordan har du det med at se? Så nu er du entusiast, ved jeg godt, men hvordan forholder man sig til en ballet, der er 200 år gammel, hvis man vil føre nogle linjer til vor tid? Kan man det?
Det synes jeg godt, man kan. Altså, og det synes jeg, Nikolaj Hyppe har været et fantastisk godt eksempel på, at man kan. For den måde, han blandt andet koreograferer Sylfiden, det var jo ikke fordi der var så mange trin, der var anderledes, for hvor meget kan man ændre på selve balletten. Mm. Men så har han ændret på kostymerne, på scenografien, som jeg synes var fuldstændig forrygende.
Forrygende,
fuldstændig fantastisk, og dermed har bragt den her 200 år gamle ballet op til nutiden. Ikke ved at ændre voldsomt meget i selve balletten, men i det udtryk, man fik som publikum på grund af scenografi og kostymer. Mm. Altså noget. Det synes jeg var ret fantastisk.
Ja. Ja.
Det generede ikke mig, at det var en ny koreografi.
Overhovedet ikke. Nej. Det er jeg enig med dig om. Fuldstændigt. Det som jeg kan føre paralleller til det menneskelige, det generelt menneskelige, er, at det er jo en kærlighedshistorie, som ikke kan blive opfyldt, og som dem, der er forelsket, er ligesom i en helt anden verden. Og når de så endelig falder ned til at stå på benene her på jorden igen, ja, så går det bare ikke, jeg kender de. Og det er jo noget, som Det er menneskeligt generelt i alle tider, og vil nok være til alle andre tider også. Så på den måde kan man godt, når man kender baggrund, kan man se balletten, jo, jeg vil gerne spørge, kan man se balletten uden at kende historien? Hvad synes du?
Det kan man godt. Det synes jeg godt. Ja. Det er svært at sige, fordi man... Ja.
Nå, ikke i detaljer, men sådan overordnet.
Ja, det synes jeg godt, man kan. Jeg synes, den er ret tydelig. Ja. Jeg synes, historien er ret tydelig. Enig. Der er de lyse sulfider, og så er der heksen, de mørke kræfter, og det er jo sådan noget, der er almen menneskeligt i vores hverdag, ikke? At der er både det smukke og det mindre smukke, og det mørke og det lyse, ikke?
Ja.
Altså, historien er jo meget enkel i virkeligheden, ikke? Altså, men også meget, meget almen menneskelig.
Almen menneskelig, ja. Man kan godt føle, når han ikke kan få sin kære, den kære, han vil have, og hun forsvinder, fordi hun er jo ikke fra denne her verden. Så man kan godt mærke det i sig selv. Jeg kunne godt. Og så synes jeg, at den lethed alligevel, der er over hele balletten, det er attraktivt. Det er smukt. Der er meget æstetik i den, som er almen menneskelig. Og derfor så, jeg tænkte på, når de unge mennesker, kan vide om de kan de følge? Jo, de kan følge på nogle punkter, på nogle tråde med hensyn til æstetik og forelskelse og mangel på det og skuffelse og den ulykkelige kærlighed.
Jamen, det tror jeg er meget, altså det synes jeg er meget tydeligt.
Ja.
Det synes jeg er meget tydeligt. Til gengæld synes jeg, havde jeg lidt sværere ved Skotsk Symfoni at se.
Det var den anden ballet.
Det var den første ballet, vi så, ikke? Ja. som var Balanchine, som 200 år efter Bournonville lavede en, hvad skal man sige, en allegori over sylfiden, ikke? Med det skotske tema og kærlighed. Men jeg synes, jeg forstod den ikke rigtigt. Jeg kunne ikke rigtig finde mening. Jeg synes, altså balletten var smuk, og danserne var skønne, og Kongelig Ballet er uovertruffen, uanset hvad de laver, ikke? Næsten.
Næsten.
Men
skyldes det ikke, at der mangler en handling?
Mangler en handling?
Balanchine var ikke interesseret i handlinger. Han var mest interesseret i dansen og dansernes egen kropssprog.
Ja, ja.
Og derfor så er det en... Det er en fortælling om, hvordan dans kan udfoldes. Mm. Hvordan dansere kan opnå fantastiske, altså rent fysiske resultater. Så der er ingen historie, men jeg nyder disse skråninger, han laver på scenen. Altså dans er jo at omfange og tage magten i rum. Mm. Og det han formåede, det er at tage rummet i sin magt.
Yeah.
Han gør det på diagonale linjer, han gør det i meget uspekulerede, tattoo-agtige linjer, for han var meget begejstret. Han var på det tidspunkt, han lavede balletten, der var han i Edinburgh, og han så den engelske, meget berømte tattoo-optog. Og jeg er selv vildt begejstret for det. Og han bruger det i balletform. Og der er ingen handling. Du kan, hvis du vil, så kan du sidde og sige, wow, hvor er de præcise. De går lige diagonalt igen. De flyver gennem luften fra den ene indgang skråt over til den anden side på scenen. Og så, wow, hvor de står rigtigt.
Men der har jeg så en anden holdning til balletten. Det er ikke så meget, wow, at de øje, han kan springe højt, og hun kan løfte benet højt op. Altså, det er mere det udtryk.
Du ser dansen, følelser
dansen,
i det.
Ja, ikke kun handling. Det behøver ikke være handling. Men
det er
der
følelser.
Er nogle følelser bag de trin. Og det synes jeg, jeg manglede lidt. Altså, de danser lidt underligt.
Jamen, der er ikke noget. Der er ingen handling der.
Nej, ingen handling, men altså...
Du mener, det var for...
Det var for meget...
Akrobatik altså, for
mig
dig.
Er det for meget... Lige præcis. For mig er det for meget akrobatik, at de kommer sådan springende, bum, 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 springende tværs over scenen, og tværs over scenen, den ene vej, den anden vej. Og når man har set det to gange, tre gange, så har man set nok. Har jeg set nok, synes jeg. Så vil jeg gerne videre og se noget, hvor der er mere sådan... Hvor man virkelig føler... Hvor er det smukt, det her.
Og det er jo det sublime i ballet, hvis det kan kombinere det akrobatiske og det følelses.
Ja.
Men jeg er jo tidligere balletdanser. Så for mig er det utroligt.
Det er også.
Så er det akrobatiske jo utrolig vigtigt for mig. Fordi jeg sidder og kritiserer, hallo, har hun ikke strakt benet nok? Hvorfor har hun ikke det?
Ja.
Altså, hun falder på knæ, og hele scene, gulvet ryster. Hallo, skal du ikke tilbage, tænker jeg til øvelokalet. Altså, man skal falde ned så lidt, så man ikke hører en lyd, når man falder ned. Og så når jeg tænker meget på, hvordan er det kroplige? Fordi for mig hænger det sammen.
Ja, men der synes jeg, der synes jeg på mange måder, at nu snakker om, hvordan scenen ryster, når de sætter sig ned på knæ. Jeg husker for nogle år, en del år siden, var jeg inde og se Svanesøen på Den Kongelige. Så kom den russiske ballet med Svanesøen ind i Forum. Så gik jeg over og se den. Og det var en verden til forskel. Altså, der må jeg sige, der blev jeg meget nationalistisk, eller nationalt følende, fordi at der er intet, der overgår Den Kongelige Ballet. Altså, de her russiske dansere, de var fantastisk dygtige, men altså, de gunkede ned i scenen, og de havde nogle voldsomme bevægelser, som... På en eller anden måde, altså, det var ikke Svanesøen.
Det var for voldsomt.
Det var meget voldsomt.
Ja.
Og der synes jeg, at det er det, der giver mig...
En oplevelse.
En oplevelse og en følelse af, at her er der noget, der virkelig rører mig dybt inde. Det er mere bevægelserne. Det er ikke, om de er udført fuldstændig, som du siger, fuldstændig
korrekt.
Jeg skal
have dem fuldstændig.
Men
det er ikke kun, jeg skal sige det. Det, som giver mig den der følelsesmæssige, ikke? Sådan. Hvor hjertet kommer lige i klem et sted. Selvfølgelig, men det sublime er jo, når begge dele kan kombineres.
Ja, det er rigtigt.
Ja.
Det er rigtigt.
Men jeg synes, det var en god aften med hensyn til teknik, men som sagt, det æstetiske, scenografien var vidunderlig.
Vidunderlig. Det er også smukt.
Og det betød ret meget for at live sig ind i historien. Så du har måske noget mere tilføje, som du har lyst til at give lytterne en bredere forståelse for, hvad vi har set.
Ja, hvad har vi set? Altså, vi har jo set de her to balletter, som foregår i Skotland, og man har prøvet at koble dem sammen til en aften, en sammenhængende aften. Og jeg synes, det var meget smukt. Jeg synes bare ikke, det hang helt sammen. Men altså, det er jo sådan.
Ja.
Men selvfølgelig, det hang sammen på den måde, at det var det skotske tema, der gik igen.
Ja.
Mændenes påklædning, de der kilte, de havde på. Der læste jeg for øvrigt interessant et sted, at de er syet. Det er meget hver kilt er syet specielt til hver balletdanser, og de skal passe fuldstændig, og de der folder, der er bagpå, de vejer over 2 kilo, fordi der er så meget stof, og de er foldet sådan, at tæren fuldstændig passer sammen.
Det lægger jeg også mærke til, at tæren passer totalt.
Fuldstændig, og hvis det ikke passer, så bliver de kasseret, synes jeg var meget interessant, men mest det der med, at de render rundt med den der ballast bagpå,
to kilo.
To kilo.
Og de flyver i luften med det.
Og de flyver i luften med det her.
Ja. meget... Jamen, jeg synes, de har valgt nogle meget smukke tærten.
Mm. Det synes jeg. Ja.
De var afstemte i farverne. Mm. Jeg læser mærke til den der blå og det grønne
ja.
Som er jo kendt, eller ligesom kombineres med det skotske associationer, er med det samme skotsk tern, ikke?
Helt sikkert.
Og det var, men det var meget smukke afdæmpe. Det var ikke de skrigende grønne og de skrigende blå. Det var meget afdæmpe og harmoniske, og jeg synes, at danserne, de mandlige danser, var helt...
Helt fantastisk.
Helt fantastisk.
Helt fantastisk. Ja. Ja. Jeg synes, det var en smuk aften, en god aften, og jeg glæder mig jo altid til at komme ind og se balletter.
Ja. Vi gør det måske sammen igen.
Det gør vi. Ja. Det gør vi. Ja. Til hver en tid.
Det var Bente Katz Nielsen, tusind tak, fordi du kom til studiet. Tak skal du have.
Og tak, fordi du ville snakke med mig.
Altid med glæde. Tak. Hej.
Hej.
De lyttede til Mendelssohns symfoni, Scotts symfoni, den som er musikken til ballet af samme navn. Jeg vil gerne knytte nogle bemærkninger til begge balletter, fordi selvom der er meget stor aldersmæssige forskel, den ene er fra 200 år siden, sylfiden, og den anden er fra 1950, Scotts symfoni. Så alligevel knytter de sig til én ting, og det er det romantiske, den romantiske periode i Europa. Den kan man se på malerier, og den kan man også høre ved musikken. Den knytter sig til nogle tilfølelser, den knytter sig til ganske faste elementer, som er det romantiske, kærligheden, forførelse, konflikter, besættelse. Det er elementer, som romantikken beskæftiger sig meget med, også litteraturen. Så man føres ind i en verden af følelser i begge balletter, og musikken understreger det selvfølgelig. My guest at the studio is Anne Crossett. For me, the main person in Denmark to introduce modern dance and make it a part of the dance culture in Copenhagen. I have known by name and for all the time she's been or I've been here in Denmark, but I never met her. And then someday, for about a month ago, we had to be at the same place at the same time, obviously, and I was introduced to Anne Crossett, and just by a click of a second, we started talking to each other, and it was like we knew each other for a long, long time. And then I heard about what Anne was doing, is doing, and I said, of course you have to come to the studio and tell about it. Of course. And then suddenly, when we were to a ballet performance, Anne was there, of course, too. So, welcome to the studio, Anne. It's a great wish coming true. And it's my pleasure. And I'm very proud and very honored. You, as a very, very busy person, are at our studio. And we can talk about ballet, about movement, about your project with the kids in Greenland. I think we can talk a lot and a lot of time, but welcome to the studio. It's your forum here. Oh. Please tell more about yourself.
First, I would just like to say thank you so much. I'm going to be speaking in English. I am so grateful to be invited to the studio. And so thank you for everyone who's here.
It's our pleasure, our honor.
And also out there, great. Yes. And I just really am grateful for the opportunity to speak about my work and let everyone know a little bit about what's going on now. And also, you know, you mentioned it earlier, what has happened. And I'm... above and beyond honored to be recognized as one of the main, I will say I was part of a main force. There were others. And that there was a period, I feel I'm an American. I'm coming to Denmark a long time ago in the 70s and 80s. And in that moment, I wasn't thinking that much about anything except doing what you do. And that was, at that moment, dancing and performing and creating. And so it was never the idea to be the pusher or the pioneer or anything like that. It was just to continue the art, the choreography, the dance that I was doing in an environment that I thought was more conducive to my work than in New York City. Now, in New York, I have been so grateful, again, to have the fabulous education at the Juilliard School. I could see myself in New York with a little one-room apartment, a bunch of plants that died every time you went on tour with Martha Graham or Jose Limon. That's what I was kind of working towards. And thought I need a little bit of Europe. Because also in the 70s, it was like, it's modern dance is coming. It is blossoming. It is there. But you really weren't considered an artist unless you had been to Europe or had some international experience. And I had a moment where I could study for a year in Copenhagen. That choice was between either studying for a year in Copenhagen or doing an internship with a dance company in Switzerland. And I chose Copenhagen because I thought the idea of social democracy sounded fascinating. And I knew something was not quite right for me in growing up in America. It was just like, let's see what this is about. And I did, and I thought, this is a place where I could manifest my dreams. Now, my dreams were not to, like, start anything which kind of ends with that, but I've always wanted a career. I wanted to make a contribution. I also wanted a family. And I'm the generation of dancers where just before my generation, my generation before and definitely one before that, if they saw the baby bump, your career was over. So I could see in Denmark, oh, you could have a family, you could be an artist, you could have a normal form of existence. I ran into Pelle Gudmundsen Holmgren, mm-hmm. a fabulous composer, and mm-hmm. I was invited to his home, and I could see he had a family. He was making great art. He was producing. His mm-hmm. his work was getting out there, mm-hmm. and he wasn't having to run to Studio 54 or act crazy or be anything except what he was. And that was a big inspiration. Like, this is a very cool place to work. It was a cool time. As I mentioned, Pelle Gudmundsen Holmgren, there were a lot of modern composers going mm-hmm. on at that time in Denmark. Mm-hmm. We have Pelle, we have Pia Norgård, we have exactly. Hans Abrahams, all those mm-hmm. fabulous composers. And they were getting funding easier if they were doing tverfaglige projekter. So if they could include dance in something, they could get their funding. And that was a great benefit to the dance world, so that there was...
Good you say that, let me interrupt, so many people are against the funding to artists. Now, it's so nice to hear how good it is and was. And that way, maybe people can support it too. Please continue, sorry for interruption.
No, let's get into this, because I hadn't thought of it in this way. When I came from America, before the Pelle project was kind of connecting, or around the same time, connecting with another dancer, Cher Gertzi, another American. It's kind of a chance meeting, and we decided to. Or actually, it was through Pelle. Eventually, through Pelle. Yeah, but at that time we were. We're doing the American thing. We taught. We worked at the theater schools, Claire taught classes.
Please, don't forget uppercuts. Please come.
Oh, I will. But we're funding. Miriam,
yes.
There's much to talk
yes,
about.
Yes, there
so
is.
So little time. So we are, what's happened, you know, as 27-year-olds, we're teaching as much as we can to earn money to pay our dancers. And then our dancers, I remember very specifically dancer and mime artist, Torkel Linnebier, said kind of like, this isn't enough money. We're like, this is what we can make. He said, make? You have to apply to the government. The idea of applying to a government for anything...
Americans can't understand that.
So that's kind of what happened. And that leads to work that I've done with the cultural ministry. I was the first dancer ever on the theater council. Now it's called Scenekunstudvalg. And there was a paragraph 69 at that time that made it legal. You know, you weren't to apply for funding, but there wasn't, it was like one paragraph said anybody outside the Royal Theater had many paragraphs, anyone outside of the Royal Theater could apply for ballet, for opera, and I guess children's theater. So that wasn't a lot, and it didn't say modern dance, and ballet was a style, so there was some work to be done there. However, arts need funding. Mm-hmm. And basically, in the Danish situation, there is good funding, I think, from Niels Mathiasen back in the day mm-hmm. in the 60s and creating
exactly.
of the arts councils. And that happens in Britain and also New York Art Council around that time, you know, where it's like, okay, somebody's got to fund this, mm-hmm. you know, and is it going to be... the monarchs, is it going to be royal art, or is it going to be Texaco art, or is it going to be, you know, kind of the Christian church backed out at a certain time? So, those were big supporters. Louis XIV had gone for a while. There's like, who's going to support this, and how does that influence the arts?
Right.
And therefore, in the Danish system, where there is money for the arts. There could be more, in my opinion. But there's an arm length. You don't have the government saying, here's money and please create, you know, a piece for my daughter's wedding, or here's money and please make your arms look like that. There was an incident. I don't want to get in. There was an incident where there was actually a politician that corrected arms once, but that doesn't matter. Anyway, in that period, there was pushing, you know, from the musician side, from the dancer side, to get a school established, a dance's house, you know, venues to perform in, and to create works. And that was a very wonderful beginning. And then you look back and like, oh, okay, that was the beginning. Yes. We didn't even know that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You were just doing it because you had to yourself.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It was a need.
It was a need. Exactly.
It was a need. Yeah.
But this start was the start of acknowledging here in this country that modern dance is just as important and just as an art style as the classical ballet. Mm-hmm. And now you mentioned Martha Graham, and she was with her life as well an inspiration for all of us interested in the movement. And I say movement as an art style, not only as a dance, but as a style recognized as a movement to express feelings. And I think modern people can understand it more than even the classical. And I say something that I'm sure you know. I just repeat it for the audiences. Ehadna Haim has said, there is no age for movement. And that's what you did. You showed us, to begin with, that there are feelings, there are stories to tell in movement. So, please continue. I just mentioned these two things.
Please get into this. I mean, the one thing I would like to say is that as time goes on, I can see the role that we played. And I say we, you know, it's not just me, but we played in the 70s. However, as time goes on, there's much more proof and interest in the modern art forms in Denmark. There are women that are working on this, men and women that are working on it, that have their stories are, some of them obviously are not around now, but their stories never made it to the radio. Their stories never made it to the newspaper. And there's interesting work being done at the university right now by also someone who was out and about there at this time, Karen Vidal at the university. And she's gotten some funding, government funding, but private funding from Augustinus Fund.
All right.
To look into the documentation. And this has been an interest for her forever. And it's just like there's a choreographer's name, I don't think a lot of our listeners, some will know, but Amelia Valbom, who was like the first woman choreographer at the theater. And she comes in, and she's in the 1920s and 30s, and she's creating works, the first woman choreographing for the theater. See, I mean, her work is not that well known, if at all. Not at all.
Not at all.
And so there are also periods in history where, and also who had the power. There were a lot of dance companies touring Europe in the 60s and late 70s. I mean, it takes forever for Merce Cunningham to get to Denmark. And Graham had been here, but that was a full, like, Sol York touring, pushing things. But at that time, the Royal Theatre had some leadership that didn't want that much competition. So they were not inviting some of the big ones that were going to Sweden, that were going to Norway. And that influences the Danish dance scene more than I realized kind of as time goes on. Mm-hmm. And you know, historically, things are put down, you know, for different reasons. And there has been, you know, the whole women composers, women choreographers in that period are just, you know, not out and about as they are today. So I just, with respect to history, there have been modern thinkers, modern movers, modern pushers, you know, throughout history and mm-hmm. also, you know, in the Danish history. You mentioned Ohad, that's a schoolmate.
Oh, yeah, he was at Graham.
He was at Juilliard. Yeah. He was at Juilliard.
In Juilliard and then Graham.
Right, so what happens when I'm in Denmark, Ohad comes in, so I don't have that much to do with him, so I go back as a fourth-year student. He's like a second-year student. But we have performed together in the work of Anna Sokolo. Do you know that choreographer?
It's my, you touch my youth, you touch my life.
Okay, all right. Did you get to work with her?
No, I'm not a dancer.
No.
I was a ballet dancer, but I'm an architect. I'm not working as a dancer. I've not worked as a dancer, but movement, dance, classical dance, I never left it.
Okay.
And I introduced it actually to the radio here. And people say, why? What for?
Mm-hmm.
Who wants to listen to it?
Mm-hmm.
But I kept on demanding my right to talk about ballet as I talk about other cultural subjects.
Mm-hmm.
But I can say proudly today mm-hmm. that I was the one introducing it as a sub, like we talk now about
mm-hmm.
it,
mm-hmm.
as I consider it just as important and just as important as other sides of our cultural life.
Mm-hmm, 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 mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to say you can express feelings in many ways.
Yeah, yeah.
And ballet and movement are just as to appreciate as music, literature,
mm-hmm,
whatever.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Now the thing about that, Miriam, is that you've had exposure to it. You have a knowledge. You have movement. You're an architect. You're in the, you know, arts yourself. The dance has always been the baby that's been underfunded. It's also obviously connected with the body. And we talk about repression. Well, the Christian church, who are fabulous fans of music and stained glass windows, has never to this date really put the body in the church, you see. So when is it, you know, the stories of Esmeralda and Hunchback. You know, that's a whole story of that period in time. Dancers and actors, they couldn't even be part of the Christian church. They were not permitted a Christian funeral. So we're kind of like behind here. And that even in 1970s, when I'm going to get my passport in Denmark, for Denmark, I was 70s, it was New York City, I'm filling out the forms to get there, and they say, what do you do? I'm a dancer. They say, no, you can't write that, because that was associated with prostitution. And this is grand. I mean, I am in one deep contraction. I am the artist. I am not making one move that's unnecessary. Movements don't lie. I'm in my big Martha Graham phase. It's like, what do you mean I can't write dancer? You know, I'm writing dancer. They said, no, you can't do that. Can't do that. Can you write teacher? I said, no. And they said, yeah, teacher, what grade do you teach? And I put up my third finger and I said, third. Because, I mean, it's just like, it's so insulting. And now, luckily, I mean, the times have changed and movement and the bodies are, you know, right, left and center in the art world. I think the big push also comes in terms of when commercially it's like, oh, whoa, MTV hip hop. Let's get, you know, that's always pushes.
Break
the
dance,
commercial
hip-hop,
pushes. Yeah.
All these new modern movements are starting with you and your generation before and before maybe. It is accepted as a kind of art now.
Mm-hmm. I know. Well, if we say me and my generation, look what I just said. It was musicians. It was Pelle Gudmundsen Holmgren. You don't think the music of the hip-hop and the breakdown, that's really helped, well, especially music videos. Well, who's going to perform?
Yeah, MTV and so on.
MTV has been a big push for movement. And this is a time where you see where in society, like commercialism, I mean, it starts Saturday Night Fever, and everybody knows movements from John Travolta.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
it's a big push for dance when commercialism really starts looking at it and using it.
The film, the movie industry
mm-hmm.
Has used dance. Not only Saturday Night Fever, but Patrick Swayze was one to mm-hmm. really make a big difference, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and look at it as a serious, mm-hmm. a serious kind of expression. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this, the level of expression that I personally find in modern movement is it means a lot to me. Mm-hmm. But you were a pioneer when you came here with what you did. How do you feel today? How do you look at it as being actually a pioneer?
Okay, Miriam, you know what? I think the way that I'm wired is that you do what you have to do, you know? And I don't think, oh, let's go become a pioneer, you know?
No, then I get.
Also in terms of my later work, okay, so you know I performed early on. I was with the big boys in composition. I was working with Cher Gertzi. Mm. We create Uppercut, a fabulous dance company that exists today. And then I am choreographing. I'm having the children. I'm having the family, at which point I am like, okay, we want to have languages in our family. We moved to California for 3 years so my babies could get thrown in a sandbox with different cultures and get English language in their system. Come back and then I work cultural politically. Actually, when I was in California working less, I did choreograph, I did teach, I performed with Heidi Duckler, Collage Dance Theater, and that put this whole new edge on something called Site Specific. You know, which was very interesting to me. But at that moment, I kind of like make a list of what needs to get done before I die. I'm 36 years old. But, you know, but that's also important because at this time, I'm still part of the older generation. I know that I can have children, but I also know you got to get out of there in the Western world. It's not like flamenco dancing or other forms of dancing like the older it is an ohad, yes, of course, but there is a reality to it. There's also a physical reality where I was not able to do as much with my body. Yes, I was also working with the kids, my own kids, but your bones are ossifying. Mm. You cannot take the biggest leaps. You cannot bend in you know, forever.
No, you're not as flexible as when you were 24 or 22.
That's right.
It's just the fact of life.
Right. And that, excuse, that's my telephone and that my...
So we cut there.
Yeah.
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 All right. We just go on.
So we continue. So you can't physically do as much. So it's like, okay, so... Now I'm getting older. I have to figure out what I want to get done before I die, which is a little kind of morbid type thinking when you're 36. But I did it, and I made the list of the things that I wanted to get accomplished. And one of them was to work cultural politically. I wanted to work either in the National Arts Foundation in America or the Theater Council in Denmark. I could check that off the list. 7 years later, I wanted to make sure that I made three more works of choreography. That happened. I wanted to get involved with a book. That happens much later. But I also wanted to, because I had seen another Juilliard graduate at a certain point in Copenhagen, I think it was Dancing City, was Riese Steinberg, from the Lamone Company and from someone who I went to school with. Ohad also would know her. Riese Steinberg had done a one-woman show at the age of 40. And I thought, okay, that's interesting. And what she had done was taken repertory that, like Isadora repertory, Marguerite repertory, of dances that existed like for older bodies. And I thought
let's go into it later. Don't forget, I would like very much to take that subject up with you. Okay. Very much.
Well, I'm getting into it now. So I'm like, here I am, like dance for older bodies, but I didn't want to go back. I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to go back. I didn't want to do like an old Graham solo or an old Isadora solo. I didn't want to go back. I wanted to go forward. At this time, I'm have an opportunity through the work of Lena Thiessen and Trevor Davis and Mandela. There's a South African project going on called Shuttle. And in this project, I get introduced. I'm down there in South Africa. I see the work of somebody that I just thought was fascinating. I get introduced and have been working with her since, Robin Orland. And I asked Robin at a certain moment if she would be interested in working together with me on my body and creating a work. And she's very provocational. She's fabulous to work with. She's horrible to work with. And she it kind of goes right to the core, So it was great to have this provocating force in, you know, in the studio, so that you know yourself, I can do provocations, but I'll maybe only go so far. She would take it the step farther. So I was extremely...
It's challenging.
It was very, 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 very challenging process, but very, very needed. And I wanted and asked it, and it became a work that was done, you know, about aging, the aging body, love-hate relationship to modern dance, and cultural displacement. So my relationship of being a foreigner in Denmark, which, yeah. So, and the piece, it took form of existing on a bus. So the audience was invited to the theater. And when they got to the theater, they were informed that the venue had been changed and please get on a bus. And the, after the bus had driven for about 5 minutes, someone hijacked the bus, and that was me.
All right.
So this piece goes on. Again, it's not very well publicized. I did it for 10 years all over Europe.
All right.
And it, and then I become a member of Robin's pickup company. So I performed with her, and that led to some work with another artist named Onking Zen, another exciting and difficult director, but I'm glad for that experience also, and got to perform in his Search Hamlet, which was done in Kronborg and Betjun Hansen Theater. I have been grateful, and I've also been pushy, so that I was performing basically until the age of 54.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
But because you mentioned age and modern dance, of course, let me start by just shortly describe a dance performance I saw in Dance and Sous for many, many, many years ago, where there were many dancers from around the world, but one lady is unforgettable for me. She was from India. She was about 60, 65. She was, I think, double as big as I am, and I'm big. She was just double as big, and she had a white dress wrapped around her legs and arms. It was not a dress, but it was something wrapped around her body. But she moved like a dream. And she could fall apart, and she could raise herself, and it was so unforgettable. You see, I can still tell you about it.
Yes.
And my dream is, and I make it now publicly, I want you to help me making a group of elderly ladies who not necessarily were ballet dancers, but want to move. To move in a way that tells feelings. Different periods of life, different experiences. A dance company. I just give it as an idea. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I want to be there myself. But I would like to see elderly people, because it's really getting me that elderly people are concerned to be non-existent. So I want to just prove that elderly people too can express themselves with the body they have, with all the injuries, with all their handicaps, with all their limits, but they can still prove and show and convince that we are still having feelings, right? So I'm looking for the old people when I go to performances. And I say, why isn't somebody doing it?
Well, I don't know exactly the real reason for here, but it's being done all over the world. I've heard very recently there's a company in Canada, like, oh, you might like that, Anne. The Can-Do work that I think it's Benjamin Adams, I hope I got that name right, that did with different bodies, bodies that are missing an arm, missing a phenomenal, phenomenal work there. There's an elderly project right now. I was actually asked to be part of it.
All right.
And I can't remember the name of this young choreographer who's working on it. I'll get back to you
here
with
this. Here in Denmark?
Here in Denmark. Oh. If she got the funding. But my situation, I thought it sounded really interesting and that she... But it involved a series of commitments of, you know, of workshops or during the, you know, it's just I don't have time for that right now, which is odd, but I think other people can
well,
relate
I
to this.
Well, I made it public now on the radio, so maybe somebody will pick it
yes,
up.
Yes, right. And I can get back to you where that's
thank
happening.
You.
And but I think the elderly people, I can feel it also is like, huh. However, in terms of motion, there's so much more information about keep moving. And the elderly people, are disappearing. And that, I think, has a lot to do with all sorts of things in society, but also the economy. You know, you're not making the money, so you're not as interesting in the economy. Now, there is a kind of new bracket for older people. So there's more focus on that and to keep moving. Now, quite honestly, artistically, I have felt better suited in projects. I mentioned the Robin Orland project. I mentioned the On King Zen project. I've also worked with open dance at the age of like 50, you know, and performed at Jazz Hooset and where else were we? We were down at Packhus something. But for me, I've enjoyed the ones, and I think this is also how I haven't made my list now for how I want to live exactly before I die, but I like the ones where it's a mixed, you know, where there is, I'm the old lady, you know, there are different dynamics within the group. Sure. Do you know what I mean? We have in Robin Orland, there's, you know, the definitely a black tutu dance, tutsi dancer. There's been a flamboyant Robert and Jared that represent, you know, they're different gender, there's different religion, there's different colors, there's different ethnic backgrounds. I think that's been very exciting.
And inspirational, I guess.
And from the moment, even in Cincinnati, Ohio, that I've been in, really, really, all my life, I've been in the dance world, which has been very giving in terms of of a life and in terms of knowledge. So,
right.
So that my first workplace is at the age of 15. No one has the same sexual preference. No one has the same gender. No one has the same religion, you know, and or socioeconomic background. What connected you was this desire for dancing or
for movement,
or specific, choreographer. So that I also maybe am not going to join the forces of an older dance company. I don't know that, but I enjoy or have enjoyed performing in these mixed, these pickup companies, kind of eclectic pickup companies.
Right. Yeah. Very interesting. And now can we move on and have the last very interesting project that you told me about and was the reason why I was so excited I asked you to come to the radio.
Woo.
And that's the children's project in Greenland. Please. Yesterday I was at the Greenlandsk Kulturhus, which, if the listeners don't know, it's in the center of the town, and it's Købmagergade, Løvstræde, Købmagergade. It's a very interesting place. I was introduced to all the purposes they are providing people from Greenland, but also people just coming by. There is a lot of culture, a lot of activities, but you had a special project, so please tell about it.
But thank you so much for spending a moment on the Greenlandic house, which is on Lustrada?
Number 6.
Number 6. And it either means Lion Street or Legal Street. I don't know what it is, but I always get it confused too. But it is off of Købmagergade, Lustrada, and that there is an exquisite lunch for 75 crowns. On Tuesdays,
yes.
I think they have that, and their web page is being redone. But it's quite a it's a little lovely place
lovely
in the
place.
Middle of town.
Yes.
And the coffee's free. I mean, it's just like go to this place,
right?
Because we all get inspired by differences and the Greenlandic differences, and we all know that there are similarities and the Greenlandic similarities. And in this differences and similarities, about 20 years ago, I started doing kids projects. And this is the moment I'm retiring. I'm not performing anymore, but I wanted to figure out ways, devices, to give what I had in terms of education. And I wasn't in the position or in the mood to do technique classes. And I also was not in the position or in the mood to choreograph on children. I've done some of that. However, I was more like, well, let them come front and center. And what sparks this off, Miriam, was a delayed train. I was in Odense. I had been given the assignment from the Odense Ballet School, the ballet schools, because as I'm retiring, I'm picking up more of the teaching. So I go back and teach much more at this theater school, the opera academy, and in the ballet schools. And they were like, oh, my gosh. And there's been this fabulous people here from the Middle East. How lovely. That was probably a Trevor Davis and exchange images of the Middle East or something. Anyway, they had come and they were like, oh, and there's schools and wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. We have to do an exchange, of course, exchange, exchange. And the exchange was that the ballet teachers from the Performing Arts Center in Amman, Jordan, would teach in the ballet schools in Denmark, and the ballet teachers, adult ballet teachers in Denmark, would go down to Jordan and teach there. And the leaders of the institutions would come up and hold foredrags. Mm. And I should organize this. And so it was like, oh, exchange, no problem. Well, it was a big problem because I was getting hit by all these adult questions like, what's in it for us, and what level of ballet are these kids on, and why do we need Russian teachers coming to teach at the Royal Danish Ballet School, and do I get more money if I go, and if we go and we're going to teach Bourneville, which version of the La Sylphide, you know, it was just like all these questions were coming up, and luckily I had a delayed train. I got message that my train was delayed for an hour and a half. So all I could do in Odense was just sit on that platform. I was trying to get back to Copenhagen, sit on that platform and think what to do. This is 20 years ago, Miriam. There's no mobile phones. There's no laptop. I don't even think I had a notebook. I just had to meditate on how to figure out what to write when I got home on my good old-fashioned stationary computer and bring it to a meeting the next day. So I'm just like thinking, and I figured out how to answer all those questions in a good way diplomatically for all the ballet teachers in Denmark. And then I looked at my watch. It was 45 more minutes. And I said, you know what? What if I spend 45 more minutes and just rethink this thing? What if I made the adults disappear? What if I pushed them out to the side and placed the kids front and center?
Mm.
And that's exactly what happened, you know, because if the kids are front and center, and what could we do? Well, they could choreograph a piece together. They're all on the same level. They're 11 and 12. Nobody had a lot of choreography there. And what if we took the money and just gave the Odense kids a little bit of money and they could buy costumes at Hennes & Mauritz, because they love that shop, yeah. And we save the money for the kids, not teachers, not adults, the kids to come to Denmark. and perform together. And the work was done over matching the kids one-on-one. They communicated through something called a video link. It was a video link. It was before links, but we had videos. We sent videos back and forth and through embassies and then sometimes on the computer. It was pretty difficult, but we did it. And that was... Yeah, that was the beginning. And I felt, hey, this kind of worked. I'm not a researcher in children or dance in that way or education, but I was like, this is pretty cool. So when I was approached 2008 by the Royal Danish Ballet School in Copenhagen to come up with something for them and outreach or for the Royal Theater and outreach, I just thought, well, let's do kids front and center again. And that not... through a project, but through the device of a dance company and put the kids in charge of the dance company. And that became Company B. And that worked out well. And with Company B, there were two exchanges or work and visiting in Greenland. And the first one was for the kids, I think that's 2012, the Company B kids, I think about 10 or 11 got to go to Greenland and they performed and they gave workshop after workshops after workshops as much as I could humanly force them to do. And there were two Greenlandish boys, teenagers, they were kind of hip hoppers, and they came to every single workshop, even for the ones for second graders. And that by the end of the tour, we were performing in Gadawak. I asked them, like, you guys are here all the time.
Yeah.
You want to be in the show? They're like, yes. So they got this big finale number.
Wow.
Salik and Malik were in that. So that in the next time we are invited to Greenland in 2018, I guess that's 4 or 6 years later, it's not as an afterthought. It starts with Salik, who's still dancing, and other dancers at this time. And we make an exchange again so that they're matched with the Danish dancers. Greenlandic dancers are matched with Danish dancers. Absolutely adorable. And again, some of the results come out, you know, through these projects. But this one, there were... two girls in this project, Eva-Luna Olsen and Kvivjak Jensen, they were outstanding. So that when I was approached by Ruth Montgomery Anderson, who is a colleague and a leader of kind of the dance world up in Nuuk, you know, like to come up with something, I just said, you know, let's base it on Eva-Luna Olsen and Kvivjak Jensen. And have them tell their stories and have them make the choreography and have them learn leadership in terms of production meetings, in terms of producing, and in terms of this. And by this time and point in time, there are so many more kids-centric initiatives that go on. It was relatively easy to get the funding. It matches for Greenland, you know, trying to get the responsibility, you know, down to the younger generations, take over and have their kids tell their stories, mm-hmm. and nobody put stories on them. And that became the project. And there was a very lovely help in getting the funding by someone who just kind of advised me and said, look, Ed, you know, you need to get this work out. And I've never been and never will be the big Facebook person. If you have to hire a social media person, that's going to...
administrate your... or
website. You know what I mean? That's another cost. And that the kids, you know it. Well, kids can do it. It's social. Well, don't have time or they don't want to. It's another thing. So this person kind of suggested, well, approach the Greenlandic House and see if they would make an exhibition. And I am so grateful for that suggestion and that... for the Greenlandic House that was so open to it, and also for the girls who are involved in this project to see how you can get your work to grow without doing performances in Copenhagen, because there's not funding for that whatsoever. That's not the idea. But how you can still influence other people. Now, those girls are... right now giving workshops to kids in East Greenland, because part of this project was shows in April, exhibition at the Greenlandic House, and a tour in September. And they were thrilled with this exhibition. They have no idea that we're on the radio today talking about them. They're going to be thrilled. They're going to learn that. They've got enough going on. But this exhibition provided a really nice forum on last Friday for a panel discussion. And that idea that taking the work, having it as a background, get some people on a panel, some of the kids, and talk about identity, dance, and children-led projects. I think there's a something very special about this, as well as the lovely photos that Anu Mosfeldt, who followed this. I must say this is really, really lovely for me because kids' projects basically take three times as long. It takes a long time to prepare your thoughts, your notes for the children. It's just easier to come in and tell them what to do. Mm-hmm. It takes time to look at them and see what would make them spark, what inspires them to get their stories out, how to work with them on their choreography and not take over. And this exhibition has been done by Regitze Oppenheim. I've had nothing. I mean, not, she's been amazing. She curated the work. Her idea was also to have the girls take pictures. She had to push the girls to take pictures and you know, create a Daubo. And that it was also her idea when we had this lovely opening and there was some wine left over. She's like, well, maybe we should have another midwives party. I'm kind of thinking, yeah, that'd be lovely. I'll get together and have a glass of wine. But no, no, Rigitza's like, oh, we'll have a panel discussion. We'll invite the... I was like, oh, my gosh. But because basically I didn't have to do that much, just show up. I'm so grateful. I am so grateful to the work that she's done. And it's led us to this moment, you know, right, which has just been lovely.
Thank you. We are not finished yet, but I think we'll have a break with some music. And then I would like to talk more generally about the movement of Greenland, the movement that I've only seen it on TV or movies, how they move and the expression they try to give about their culture, their tradition, their legends, and so on, and what I experienced in Africa. This similarity and the thoughts I maybe we can exchange about it. So let's have a break and listen to. And what are we going to listen to? Rasmus Lübeck, which is a wonderful, wonderful artist with a great voice, and we and you feel, I don't understand a word of what he's singing, but you can hear the soul. You can hear that there are feelings he tries to tell, and so we are going to listen to him.
Makat sinaki avimi ila siuni semimi ila yau sutujin kinu isalu akit ila. This is what you see on that you. Ah,
You don't have to understand the words at all. Nothing. It goes directly mm-hmm. into your heart.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think it's amazing to listen to his voice.
Mm-hmm.
I have taken a picture yesterday of one of the pictures.
Picture of the picture.
Yes, exactly. And I would like very much to show it to you as the introduction of what I would like to have a conversation about.
Yeah.
Because I lived in Africa. And I went, of course, to see performances, very natural. And I've been in the northern parts of Africa as a tourist, but I lived in Kenya.
Mm. Mm.
And those years are unforgettable for
mm-hmm.
me.
Mm-hmm.
And what I recognized when I saw this picture,
mm-hmm.
This is a picture of taken from the back of a dancer with her hands in front of her and the fingers expressing something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's like a black-white picture
mm-hmm.
expressing movement of dancers.
Mm-hmm.
And what immediately when I saw it, I got a reflection of what I saw of African
mm-hmm.
dance.
Mm-hmm.
And now that you have been working with Greenland's dance, am I on the right track when I find that people that are not so much yet exposed to modern culture still have some kind of intuitional way of expressing feelings and thoughts where they don't rely of our rules of what is nice, not nice, mm-hmm, good, mm-hmm, not good,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
correct, not correct, but even to the small finger of their hands, like this dancer, can express without limits, without borders. And I thought, I recognize it. I can see it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I saw in Kenya.
Wow. Yeah.
Am I correct on the right track?
Miriam, you are so wonderful. I think you are on so many tracks and always right. Also because what it is, it's really getting at it. Now, one thing on the track, you mentioned the word cultures that are not exposed to modern culture. I think we have time. Check out this story. The project is called Greenland. It's called Kids Front and Center. Greenland is a land of artists. It goes back to cultural policies, right? So we are in the 60s and we're getting the cultural funding going on in the governments, and the Danish government is making funding. And I've been on these committees. You know, you always got to get some to Jutland and Faroe Islands,
right,
or whatever.
Yes.
You know, otherwise there are people, even whatever. So they send somebody up to Greenland. Find the artist. We have to check the boxes. We got to get two or three artists with getting some Danish government funding, or there's going to be, so we can feel good about ourselves. So they send Bodil Kolen up, a fabulous artist. She's no longer with us. As she's on the committee, she goes up, come back again. And she said, they said, okay, so can you give us the names of the artists? And she goes, no. And they said, come, you're supposed to go up there and figure this out. And now you're back here, you know. And she goes, yeah. Because everyone is an artist. So it's a cultural thing. There was a culture in which you sang like Rasmus Lubert. Even though you were not educated as a singer, you were educated as a pilot, mechanica. He worked on the air strips. He was in air group working on the airplanes, where families would, you know, have the beating as well as the singing as well as the dancing as part of the dinner conversation. So this is what happens when we kind of westernize, the same in Africa, you know, turn things into performances. These the songs and the dances of Greenlandic were not performances. They were part of a culture. And therefore, it was like specially endowed people that really felt for it, that created, you know, these spirits or were members of the community that had to kind of, you know, prove themselves so that they had to get people behind them in things like the trommel dance or the throat singing, which were never thought of as they're being created to be performed.
Right.
Same in African culture, same in Irish, same in Greek, you know, but it's soon, it's like the commercialism, you know, who knows if hip hop was ever supposed to be performed, just hung out in, you know, different clubs and experience. But as soon as someone, one, can make money off it, or two, try and assimilate or make something so that we can understand it. Now, so I've thrown that out there, right? But the traditional art movement of Greenland was never thought of as a performance art. It has a very special place in society, and it is now protected by UNESCO, and that there are people that have experienced it, are trying to, you know, keep it alive, get it back in the culture. Those girls in that picture are not doing anything trauma dance. They didn't want that as part of their show. I mean, we kept pushing for it. Their styles are ballet styles. The styles are modern dance styles that they had learned as kids, sometimes in Nuuk, sometimes in Copenhagen.
But it comes through. It comes through their own way of moving, which is absolutely, for me, fascinating.
Yep.
It's coming through, like in this picture, and okay, the fingers or the hand.
Right. And that picture is taken from a section from behind, but it's also Anu Mosfeldt, who took the pictures, was very concerned about the kids, that they would tell their own story, that things would be translated into Greenlandic, you know, not Danish, not English, very kind of, we got to get back to things. And I think that's a statement of him also, like, look at this. That was called Angry Lions. It's a part of the piece where the parents were being terrible to Lulu, the main dancer, you know. So there wasn't a section. I had no idea they wanted to, like, tell a very literal story, and they did. And in that, there were these parents that were awful. And that's what that is expressing there. The anger, the angry lion, we called it, the angry lion. So lion is Africa. I mean, it just connected there. So what you see is so on spot. So on spot.
Okay.
Yep. Angry Lions of Kenya. No, they'll hear this, or I'll tell them about it. And the other thing is that there will be a push now in Greenland through the new dance center to include the traditionals, their different names on the drum dancing. You know, they're different.
I love the drum dancing.
And the vocal work, and that Bendu Schmidt is here in Copenhagen. She was on the panel. You would have loved to have heard this.
Oh, I know. I would have loved to be
fabulous
there, but I was
prohibited.
I couldn't.
Yeah, or
couldn't
holidays,
that day. I
whatever.
Knew about it, but I couldn't attempt it. I'm very sorry. Hmm. I would like love to. Yeah. But you know what I also thought when I saw the picture, and I missed the drums sound, and I was thinking, why didn't they put somewhere in this house, not to the exhibition particularly, but generally, some place, somewhere in the house, the drum sound.
Wow.
And I missed it.
Yeah.
But what happened was that I had such this visit yesterday for, I was there about an hour, brought so many reflections, because, okay, there was no sound, and I was looking at the pictures of the girls that were dancing, right? And I was in the Greenland house, and I saw the Inuit of Canada with their drums, and I heard the sound in my head. That was a very, it was, well, I didn't experience that before, but it made me think of course, cultural connections of the Inuit people. And I was thinking, next time I'm doing a dance, it's going to be like the Inuit. It's going to be with the drums for my own fascination. Yeah.
Okay, your own fascination. And this is, you know, your exposure to society, your intellect, your background, your worldly knowledge. We're working here with teenagers, right?
Yeah.
So they're kind of not like into like what the old folks are into, if I can say it like that.
Wow.
So in this there's a, it's a story of a teenage girl who is not doing that well on the home front, you know, so she kind of runs away. She meets another girl who we don't quite figure out how they meet, and they run into the nature, and they run in and they find a cave.
And they thought about the Inuit music.
You can't push it on these kids. We got to get it in there.
That's what they made me to.
That's what they made you think.
Yeah.
But I tell you what they've picked. I mean, it's crazy. So there is some Greenlandish heavy metal in there, but there's also Johnny Cash about a beautiful friendship. But it was like weird that okay. But they pick the music, and I let them. I know this from Company B. You know, they pick the music. They pick things like a person I never even heard of before. These kids introduced me to it in, you know, 2008, somebody named Lady Gaga, Maslanga, should that be art, you know what I mean, whatever. Anyway, they are pushing it, and they have a feel for what's going to work with their audience. This piece was created for second to fifth graders. So it's not even made for teenagers or even our age. They had to show this in schools for little kids. They have but of course teenagers come to it. But they, that was also part of the grant. You know what you kept
what
to secure
you had to
that
do.
You get make sure every child, it's second to fifth grader in Nuuk who wants to see it. Everyone in there for sure. Everyone in Tasiilaq and Kulusuk where they are now sees it. And then, okay, other people come. But they have a feeling of what's going to work for their audience. And
it worked.
And it worked. But it's
for
not
tumba
dancing. But it's fabulous for you, it sends you off all these signals. You can also see in the clothes there, the designer clothes, if you can describe that.
Is this picture?
Yeah.
I'm sitting with a picture of six girls, all in the same costume. And it's designed by them, right?
This one is a Greenlandish fashion designer.
Fashion designer.
Yeah.
Because it's like looking at a wood, you're in somewhere in nature, and the leaves are falling down on you, and it's autumn. They are dark. It's about November for me. But they are all in the same costume.
Yeah, that's for when the audience comes in. They're all wearing the same costume. The two lead dancers are in a dress. And these are costumes that they had before, that they've used before. When the kids come into the room, these dancers are in the center stage on green grass islands. There's a rope around these dancers, so it's like coming into an exhibition. And at a certain moment, and they're improvising, at a certain moment the rope is lifted and the kids who have been standing around the rope come into them and they have a warm-up together so that they meet their children there. They take the children back, create a half circle with the green grass islands, and that those costumes transform themselves under the show to other things they picked out. Skirts for the cave, blouses for the parents, and Eva Luna and Kvivjak have on another dress underneath that. So it's kind of a top covering, a very artistic, loving top covering. It's a little bit more blue. There's a blue in it, and I think that some of the formation, is that a map of Greenland? I think that's one of her
Right. You can see that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very interesting. And I just...
It's graphically very catching.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a very interesting... B.B. Clements, a Greenlandish fashion designer.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, I am so thrilled that you spent that time there, that it brought back those... brought so many thoughts and associations about what is movement, what is music, what is culture.
Yeah, that's really like the background of what we've been talking today here in the studio. But it's not new for me. It ain't new at all that I have some kind of mind connections when I see things. I don't know. I think my stay in Africa has made such a big impact on me, and I'm very sensitive to the way they express themselves. And I say I never left Africa, but in some way, visiting yesterday the exhibition brought so many thoughts back. So, and cross it. I have no words to thank you for coming and visiting us and giving us your time. It was my honor. Thank you so much for being with us.
Miriam, all I can say is thank you for this opportunity. I hope your listeners can hear how much I've enjoyed it and how appreciative I am and the dance world is that you and your colleagues in this radio station takes time to focus on movement and art and children and culture.
Thank you. Thank you so much.